Lunar Pages. Do you know what that is? Just take a guess. A company called Lunar Pages. Would you have any idea what kind of company that is? Of course you wouldn't guess, but I'll tell you what they do. They are the best. If you own a business, large or small, or in between, Lunar Pages offers reliable, scalable web hosting and everything you need. Hosting packages that include the tools, the scripts, the support you need to run an efficient and secure business website. I have a bunch of websites. I'm not a big business, but I've been using Lunar Pages, I think, going on almost 10 years now. And the biggest plus of Lunar Pages is when you call them, a guy in your zip code picks up the phone and he can dial right into your server and fix it. No matter what your needs are, cloud computing, storage, dedicated IP, SSL certificates to secure your site's transactions if you have e-commerce, and of course you do if you're a business. They also have this. This is their patented website hack protection. It's called Secure Live. It's a service that continually monitors your server and stops hackers before they get in. All the scripts your developers need, they have all the stuff that I don't even know what it is. PHP, Perl, Python, Ruby on Rails, Lunar Pages. Look for their button on our sponsors page at philhewlettandfriends.com. Click it and you'll receive deep discounts exclusive to you because you're hearing me talk about it right now. A 30-day money-back guarantee. Lunar Pages. All right, coming up in just a little bit on the program, you know those highway signs, those LED signs? The people have been hacking into them, and one guy who hacked into it and just put something fairly innocuous on the sign might be going to the big house for many years. They're going to make an example out of him. We'll tell you about that coming up. And is baseball ready to go, basketball ready to go from 3 points to 4-point shots? I've got an opinion about that, and Dale's going to tell us about that later in the program. But right now, massive new construction that we think is sound and safe, a political upheaval, the Zika virus. Let's all head to Brazil for the Summer Olympics. Yay! Hey, you know, I have a lot of questions about how this is going to work out for Brazil. I bet you do, too. Joining us to talk about it is a professor of economics at Widener University in Chester, Pennsylvania, currently serves as a senior fellow with the American Consumer Institute, is an ambassador for the Internet Innovation Alliance. We love that. Joseph Fuhrer, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Am I pronouncing the name properly, sir?
Yes, that is correct. Thank you.
Okay, good to know. Now, the news out of Brazil ahead of the opening of the Summer Games has not been encouraging, has it?
No, it hasn't. I mean, if things could go worse, it'd be tough to figure out how anything could get worse than it is now.
Yeah, let's itemize them now, starting with the Zika virus, because that's the one that's got everybody frightened.
Yes, I mean, you know, in terms of the economic impact, there's going to be a lot less visitors than one would expect, you know, in the normal Olympics under normal conditions. So it's going to hurt the Brazilian economy, you know, from what they expected that they would be able to generate in economic impact because of a lot of people not going, and that's going to, you know, hurt jobs. It's going to hurt, you know, restaurants and hotels and things of that nature.
Well, I imagine you have data in real time to project ahead because the Zika virus must be affecting all of that as we speak and has for several months now.
Yes. I mean, the question is, you know, how much risk are people willing to take to go to the Olympics? And, you know, a lot of people want to go, but, you know, are you willing to take that risk and say, you know, of getting the virus and getting really sick and maybe even dying? So it's going to decrease the amount of people going there, you know, because of that fear.
Yep. Now, we saw the whole deal with construction deadlines and hurrying up and getting things done when Russia had the Winter Olympics. And so now we have the same kind of situation. There are some 12 venues that I think, large stadiums that have to be built for this. And I don't know, maybe you do, how close they are to completing these, and if indeed they'll be able to withstand a 1.0 earthquake. But the construction, I mean, that's upheaval for all the people that live in the area, is it not?
Oh, yes. I mean, it's just a question of, you know, that you don't know what's going to be done, and people have been relocated. I mean, one of the advantages they had, but it just didn't seem to happen this way, was that they had the World Cup there. So a lot of stuff should have been built already. And, you know, one of the things they may have to do if they can't get these things done is use some of the stadiums that are not, you know, near the capital and where they expected it, and have to ship them out into other areas of Brazil to, you know, use those venues. So they have that option.
And once all of those are built and all the athletes leave the Olympic Village, and it's months, if not years, after the construction of these venues, is there a need on a regular basis for all of that? I mean, what are they going to do? Have 12 or you know, 12 times 12 samba festivals there in Brazil inside these venues? What are they going to do with them?
Well, that's, you know, that becomes the issue, and we saw that also with the World Cup. They built some of them in rural areas, and they're basically have become white elephants. You know, they build them, and, you know, people say, you know, if you build them, they will come, but they won't come there because there's not enough people for stadiums that large. So that's something that they have to look at and say, okay, now that we have, we've looked at it before, but, you know, with the whole upheaval of the government, you know, who knows what the new government's going to do. They're going to look at it and they say, okay, here's the issue. We have these things. How can we best use them to generate an economic impact and help the economy?
Yeah. Now, leading up to the point at which the Olympic Committee granted Brazil the Summer Olympics for 2016, Brazil's economy has been on the upswing, if not supercharged. And I wonder about the infrastructure now and whether this can, what they build now can be, they can continue to power all of that and continue to run it, and there won't be a strain on the infrastructure, or will it be otherwise? I mean, you've taken a look at this. Is that a death blow to the upswing of the economy there in the in Brazil?
Well, I mean, one of the problems that you have to face when you build all this is the tremendous debt that you've accomplished now. So that, you know, the question is, how, you know, if they have all that debt, and in economics you talk about opportunity costs, they build all this stuff that they used it for other things, and now will that hurt the economy because they don't have the money to build, you know, other things that may be more productive? So
yeah,
it's, you know, it's a plan that, you know, people should have sat down and thought about. And this is one of the things you have with the Olympics, is that people say, hey, you know, we want the Olympics, but they really have to look at it and say, what is the economic impact in the beginning? And how is it going to affect us 5-10 years down the road? And a lot of people don't do that. They just get the glory of saying, we're having the Olympics.
Yeah. And can you think of a better time to oust your president?
Well, it's just one of those crazy things that, you know, people got upset and, you know, are not happy if they look at it and they're seeing, you know, poverty in the area and they're building these giant stadiums. So it got to a point where people just said, hey, enough is enough, and we want somebody new in here.
Yeah. Now, is there a big political vacuum right now? Is there upheaval? Are there factions that want to change things dramatically? Or is it more or less the same like we have here, two-party system?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of factions. There's all kinds of different people who are going to have unrest. But I think what's going to happen is, you know, the country will get together when the, you know, when the Olympics come, you know, for national pride, and you're always going to have certain groups that will protest and things of that nature. But I think what's going to happen is essentially the nation will say, okay, you know, we're in the spotlight. We want to look as though, you know, we're an up-and-coming country, that, you know, we want to have this economic growth. We want to have people eventually come here and visit us. They're going to put their best foot forward.
All right, last question for you, and certainly you must have come to some kind of conclusion on your own as to what is next for Brazil. Will that country benefit in the long run from hosting the Summer Games?
Given the government upheaval and the virus, I feel that, you know, it's going to be difficult for them to actually gain from this. But if they get a new government in, it's smart enough, okay, we have this infrastructure. Are there ways of getting international things, like we can get a lot, you know, a lot of soccer games here, you know, international things of that nature, and use that, you know, for, as a South America, and have those sites used a lot? You know, if they can do good planning, you know, they can benefit from it.
Yep. Joseph Furr, thank you very much for your thoughts on this, and we'll cross our fingers and hope things work out for the Olympics and for Brazil going forward. Thank you, sir.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right. Coming up in just a moment, we're going to talk about a high-ranking political official here in the United States admitting that maybe, yes, we have seen UFOs and the government's covering them up. And we'll tell you about that and also talk about those LED signs that people are hacking into and what's going to happen to one of those hackers. But first, I want to tell you about America's largest online distributors of heating and air conditioning products, one of Inc. magazine's fastest growing private companies in America. They're called Heat and Cool. The folks over at Heat and Cool specialize in bringing you the best, most efficient air conditioning, heating, and ventilation systems in the world at the best prices possible. Their orders ship free to U.S. continental states. Most orders ship the same day. Here's how it works. You order the stuff. You go online. You do all the research. And the research is all there on the Heat and Cool website. And then you order. It's delivered to you for free. You get a hassle-free 365-day return on all purchases. So just in case you're not real good at doing your research and you buy the wrong thing for your house, they'll take it back, no questions asked. And then they'll help you order the right thing the next time so that you can hire a technician to install it. And you save money this way, let me tell you. The experts at Heat and Cool have been providing support for over 20 years. They'll meet or beat a lower price on an identical in-stock item from another online authorized reseller. Plus, they'll beat that price by 3% just because you found it. Some restrictions apply. Click on the Heat and Cool button on the sponsor page at philhewlettandfriends.com and make your house nice and cool for the summer. Will you do that? Heat and Cool. Thank you. All right, guys. So it's a wonderful time of year, is it not?
It's beautiful.
Love it.
The night sky is nice and clear. You can see all the stars, and all of a sudden something flies by. and then it stops. It hovers. And then it takes a completely different angle, and it takes off. And you say, holy crap, what was that? It was a UFO. Did you see that? No, I didn't see it. You're nuts. You're absolutely nuts. But you know what? Many of us believe that the government has seen these, and they know exactly what they are, but they're just not telling us because we're not ready yet. Isn't that right, Dale?
That's right. Well, you know, Hillary Clinton made implications that the government may be withholding classified UFO documents, which is interesting. Because, you know, there's been reports from credible witnesses,
yep,
you know, trained military and law enforcement, you know, personnel, and they've even had independent radar data to indicate such. So it's interesting. And last week on the show, we had a discussion about there was 1,284 new planets discovered.
Yes. Right.
So it makes you wonder, is there other type of living beings out there?
Yeah, have to believe there is. By the way, if you want to go listen to that show, it's the title of the show. It's episode 273. Wow, we've done that many. It's called A Walmart on Uranus. That's the name of that episode.
I love it.
Yeah, I just like to point that out. We don't, you know, look backwards very often, but that was a banner day. And Rod Pyle, our NASA expert, he knows his stuff. But Hillary says that maybe we know something about UFOs, and we're just not going to tell you about it yet.
Which makes it interesting if she becomes the nominee for the Democratic Party and gets in as president.
Yeah. Then we can
open
the vault.
Yeah.
Open area of, what is it?
Area 51?
Yeah.
Area 51?
Yeah. So that makes it interesting. And speaking of which, her competitor's down the street here today. Do you feel the burn?
Yes, I do. it's like the afterburn from his mothership. It landed right up the street. And there hundreds of people were lined up when we tried to get into the studio here. It was hard to get in. All right. So we'll see what happens with that. Now, we've all driven along the road, and we've seen those little construction signs. They're on the back of some kind, like a diesel motor on wheels. And then on top, there's an LED sign that says construction straight ahead. And every now and then, some Yahoo gets over there and hacks into the thing and puts a different message on there just to be a goofball. And we see that all the time, Skylar, don't we?
Oh, we do. And a Texas man could land himself some serious time in the slammer for hacking into one of those. What originally said construction ahead became drive crazy, y'all.
I like
only
that.
Only in Texas, y'all.
Oh, yeah.
I love that.
Oh, yeah. When Jeffrey Eltgroth.
You're getting all the names today.
I am.
What was the other one? Dushathory? Dushathet. Yeah. Now, what's this one?
Eltgroth.
Eltgroth. Yeah. All right, go ahead.
He did a little fiddling with the electronic message board. And now, apparently, it didn't take much effort for him to guess the board's username and password. I guess they're really easy to hack into.
Yeah.
But the penalty is no joke. He was charged with criminal mischief, tampering with transportation communication equipment.
Yeah.
And that's a third-degree felony, which is punishable by up to 10 years in prison.
Wow.
Yeah. The maximum sentences are rarely imposed, but still, I mean, depending on where you commit these crimes, you know, this is a third degree felony. That's pretty bad. And he was just, you know, trying to be funny. Drive crazy, y'all.
Yeah.
But you know what? Texas, they don't mess around, man. And isn't that their motto?
Yeah,
don't mess with Texas. Yeah. I mean, they're serious. I mean, they enforce capital punishment. They have like a diamond lane for the gas chamber.
Do they?
Oh, my gosh. Are you kidding me? They execute, I think, more than any state.
Well, this guy isn't in any danger of being executed.
No, but I'm just saying that that's how serious Texas is. I mean, they take their stuff seriously, especially when it comes to freeway signs.
Oh, and when it comes to driving on the freeway, you don't want to speed. They will, every time someone's gotten a ticket, any of my friends doing road trips, it's always been in Texas. They get you for going 2 miles, 3 miles, 4 miles over the speed limit. They're just very strict there.
My goodness.
It's like that in Canada as well, too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
In Canada?
Yep.
All right. You know what? The fact that it's so easy to hack into those, why don't they just change the username and the password and make it a little more difficult? But you know what they probably do so that the guys who work in the transportation authority don't have to memorize anything? They probably have a label on there with the username and the password.
Probably. I mean, because, you know, they're busy. That's the last thing they need to remember.
Yes. Oh, you know what this weekend is?
Hmm.
Aside from being Memorial Day weekend, it's a big weekend.
Indianapolis 500.
Racing fans, the Indianapolis 500. When I was a kid, I used to have all my Matchbox and my Hot Wheels, and I used to make a track. You know, I was like 6 years old, 5 years old. And they used to play the Indy 500, the play-by-play, on the AM radio back in the day. And I used to listen to that. My dad and I, we would just sit in there and listen to it. Of course, it was on TV, but our TV was black and white, and it was terrible. So we would just listen to it, and I would make a track with, Mario Andretti had a car, and A.J. Foyt had a car, and all these guys, Unser, all the dudes from the 1960s. And I would just I would move them into their position, whatever place they were in, and I had all my cars out there. And I would do that for however long. It seemed like 9 hours. This is the 100th race, and some people say it's the last one. David Letterman will be there, and if you ask nicely, he may let you pet his beard. The Indy 500 always happens on Memorial Day weekend. And let's see, what else? What else? Formal wear for spectators means a T-shirt with sleeves. By the way, the winner drinks milk. The loser is executed in Texas.
See, I told you.
Yeah. Further to our Memorial Day weekend, and here with a little more gravitas, the best U.S. memorials to visit on Memorial Day weekend, or any time of the year for that matter, our travel guy, Gary Warner, is standing by to join us in the next segment of Phil Hewlett and Friends. And he, not only is he our travel guy, but he has been an embedded war reporter. He's a journalist extraordinaire, so he's got quite a respect for some of these memorials. I can't wait to hear which ones he says. I want to guess which one is one of the three and see if I get it right. And we'll do that and a whole lot more in the next segment of Phil Hewlett and Friends. Here's a great idea for your next outing. A cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553.